From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Artificial intelligence is increasingly becoming part of our daily lives, whether we know it or not, and whether we want it or not. It's in the software targeting you with advertisements, answering your requests to a smartphone, and recommending the next video that keeps you glued to social media. And despite being as pervasive as corn syrup in our food supply, there are as yet no federal laws that would regulate the use of AI. And that's prompted a number of states, including Illinois, to look at imposing their own regulations. Case in point, earlier this month, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation making Illinois among the first states to ban AI-powered therapy tools. We will talk more about that later in the program. But first, we want to set a baseline for AI regulation and legislation around the technology. And joining us for that is Dr. Maura Grossman. She's got a PhD in psychology, and after working in that field for a time, she went and earned a law degree as well. Today, she's a research professor at the University of Waterloo, specializing in legislation and ethics around AI, among other things. Maura Grossman, welcome to The 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Brian. Delighted to be here.
And listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, I thought maybe we could start with a baseline. So on a scale of technology from toasters to HAL 9000, where do you rate the current generation of AI models?
They're very sophisticated, but in terms of emulating what humans do in terms of speaking or reading or understanding, things like that. But they don't actually think. And I think it's very easy to attribute human characteristics and far more capabilities to these technologies than they actually have. So you can ask something that can write a Supreme Court brief on the one hand, but you can ask it how many R's are in the word strawberry, and it can get that question wrong.
So, you know, and a lot of companies are now adding the words AI to product titles. How do we sort through that? How do you determine what is and what is not truly artificial intelligence?
The problem is artificial intelligence is it's an umbrella term. It's sort of like saying vehicle or instrument. It includes so many things. And essentially, when it's new and magical and mystical, we call it AI. And when we get used to it, like spam filters, we just call it software. So it's a funny term. And you often have to ask people, when you say AI, exactly what do you mean, to get some clarification of whether they're truly talking about AI or they're not.
Yeah. And so I guess maybe for the purposes of our conversation, we should say at this point, we're talking about these large language models, right? Claude, ChatGPT, that sort of thing. Do you use those at all in your life or work?
I'm not a heavy user. But I'll give you two recent experiences I had. One was a student who called me at the very last minute, the night before a letter of reference was due, and apparently another professor did not follow through on a promise to submit the letter. And she said to me, I need this letter by tomorrow. And I had this student a couple of years ago in a very large course, so I didn't remember her all that well. So I said, do me a favor, send me your resume, your transcript, the school application form or letter that, you know, the information about the letter they want. And then I wrote down some bullet points that I remembered about her specifically. And I put these all into an LLM and said, please generate a letter of reference for this person using their CV and using the transcript and my points about, you know, 1 to 2 pages. And it did a really beautiful job. And in 5 minutes, I had a draft I could work from. Of course, I edited it. But if I had had to do that from scratch, I would have had to say no to the student because there wouldn't have been enough time. So that was one use case that was great. Last week, A client asked me for a proposal. They want to bring AI into their law firm. And they asked me for a proposal how to do this. So I drafted the entire proposal myself. But I figured for curiosity, let me put it in an LLM and ask for any critiques or did I miss anything in my proposal? Are there any grammar or other kinds of errors? And would they format it differently? And it came back and it was dreadful. It had these big blue headings and tons of bullet points and nothing like I would ever send a client for a proposal. I was just mortified, but I did staple it as an attachment to the proposal I gave to the client. And I said, jokingly, are you sure you want to do this?
My question is, I wonder if going back to the student and the letter of reference, if that will be scanned and analyzed first by an AI at the school or the employer that this person is applying to.
It might very well these days. So many of my students tell me that so much of the HR process these days is automated, including interviews, which are also analyzed by AI often.
Yeah. How would you describe your outlook on the future of AI? Are you an optimist, a pessimist, something else?
Because I'm a lawyer, lawyers are pessimists. Well, we tend to see minefields. I'm slightly more pessimistic, and it not because I think AI is going to take over the planet and make us all into paper clips or anything like that. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about things we can already see, like bias or inequity in terms of access, who has access to these tools, privacy violations, things like that. And the direction, at least of the United States at this point, of not showing terribly much interest in regulating what could get out of control.
All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking about AI and regulation and legislation and the lack of it federally. Illinois has imposed some. There's talk of doing more here. But if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. We're talking with Maura Grossman, who's a research professor at the University of Waterloo, PhD psychologist, as well as an attorney. Again, 800-222-9455. I should say we asked people in our texting group about their use of artificial intelligence. David in Mount Morris said, "I don't use AI at all. I don't trust it. I do not wish to have any relationship with it whatsoever." He goes on to list some of his reasons. He says it's only as good as the person who programs it. It cannot, and more than likely will not, be held accountable for mistakes it makes. It de-skills people. And then he says, how many movies have been made where the AI turns against humans? It will rob us of our identity, skills, imagination, and creative desire. Not a fan, David says. Thank you for that message, David. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right. So, Dr. Grossman, how would you describe the current state of AI regulation in the U.S. right now?
Oh, as you've mentioned, there's no appetite right now for federal regulation. The concerns are primarily geopolitical, meaning that there's a lot of worry that China will beat the United States and get to, powerful AI used for military purposes or even commercial purposes before the United States. And the concern is any regulation will impair innovation. So there's been little movement in that regard. So states have taken upon themselves, Illinois is one, Colorado, California, and a couple of others, to try to start to at least regulate certain aspects, like human resources use in hiring, things like that. In the case of Illinois, for using the AI for therapy, And I think that's generally a good thing. It's probably harder for the companies because they're going to have a patchwork of regulations rather than one federal regulation, but it also allows some opportunity to experiment with different things and see how they work.
Is that lack of a federal appetite you mentioned, is that something that's changed with the Trump administration from where the Biden administration was?
Yes, absolutely. There was an executive order that President Biden had put into place. There were a Bill of Rights and other things. There was clearly much more movement towards regulation. There was a ban on certain chips being exported to China. So there was much more maybe balanced perspective in terms of safety and privacy and security versus innovation.
I want to share another message from a listener. Christopher in Brimfield said, "I personally don't use AI. I also think it can be used as a tool, not a means to an end." He said, "Like other technologies, we must put guardrails around it." What about internationally? Is the international landscape for regulating AI any different than what the American government's sort of hands-off approach?
The European Union has been at the forefront in AI regulation. So they have an AI Act that went into effect, I believe it was August 2024, and more of it is going into effect as it moves for as we move forward. And it divided AI into different risk levels. So, for certain applications, things that might manipulate people, things that are dangerous, like public surveillance, etc., these things were completely banned. The next level down are high-risk applications, education, finance, law, things like health. There are fairly rigorous set of requirements in terms of testing and registering and so forth. And then you have the third level, which is where you just have to give notice. So if you turned out to be a bot instead of a live person, there would have to be notice to me that I'm interacting with a bot. And then the lowest level, like the recommender systems and things like that that don't pose a risk, they're no obligations. So they've been out front the furthest. Now, the people who are critical say, yeah, but look at Europe. You don't see any of the big tech is all in the United States and in China. It's not in Europe. There's relatively little there, and that's because the innovation has been held back. I don't know if that's the case. I don't think it's an either-or thing, but it is often seen as sort of black and white, that you either regulate and have no innovation, or you don't regulate, and it's sort of a free-for-all, but you get ahead.
I wonder if you think what is more likely here to have that will have an international patchwork or even a state-by-state patchwork. One of my favorite examples of this is Illinois banned facial recognition technology before many other states did, and in such a way that if you buy one of those doorbell cameras, there are features that only don't work in Illinois. Apparently they work in
Wow.
all 49 other states, but there are some that the companies disable specifically for Illinois. And yet we also have those cookie notices, thanks to European law, I understand, on every website we visit. So how do you see this developing?
I think you're right. It's going to be patchwork for the time being. Maybe if there's another administration down the pike, that may change. Also, legislation is often reactive. So if something happens, then we might see litigation and regulation. I'll give you an example of that. There was not all that much concern about deepfakes until all of a sudden there's deepfakes of Taylor Swift and there's a deepfake of Joe Biden calling voters and telling them not to, go out and vote. And all of a sudden, then there's an interest in regulating. When it was just you and me, there wasn't so much interest. But, once politicians, celebrities, and so forth are wrapped up in this stuff. So if we see, we've been having a lot of talk recently about agentic AI, which is AI that actually can go out and do things for you. So not just give you an itinerary, but actually reserve your flights. You know, say something goes wrong with that, then I can see possibly some regulation, or if there's a military disaster or something that the government responds to or reacts to. But other than states, I don't see proactive movement at this point.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break on the program. We will continue our conversation with Maura Grossman, who is a psychologist and an attorney at the University of Waterloo, specializes in legislation and ethics around AI. A little later in the show, we'll talk with a couple of Illinois lawmakers who are responsible for our new ban on AI therapy tools here. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. More to come after a break. This is the 21st Show.
Support for the 21st Show comes from listeners like you and the Des Moines Art Center, presenting Firlet Baez, featuring colorful, large-scale works engaging history and legacy, on view through September 21st. Details at DesMoinesArtCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the landscape for regulating and legislating artificial intelligence. Primarily large language models is what we've been talking about, but chatbots, and there are all kinds of other forms of technology that falls under the general umbrella of artificial intelligence. We want to hear from you, 800-222-9455. We've already gotten text messages from some of our listeners. Tony in Champaign says, I'd be interested in hearing more about our AI ban. Everything I've heard is positive about fully automated therapy. I don't use AI for therapy, Tony says. I find DeepSeek particularly useful whenever I have a question that takes a lot of digging. I've even probed deep philosophical questions with it. Most of the time, I go away pretty impressed. 800-222-9455. We're talking with Dr. Maura Grossman, a PhD psychologist and a lawyer, a research professor at the University of Waterloo, specializing in legislation and ethics around AI, among other things. What are some of the potential drawbacks of regulating AI, right? This is an area that's constantly changing and evolving. What do you hear from people who say, you know what, the administration is doing the right thing by just letting it develop as it wants, or as people can push it along, I guess?
I guess the biggest criticism is unintended consequences. The more regulations and the more hoops startups have to jump through, the harder it is. So basically, you entrench the bigger tech that can afford to comply with the regulations, and smaller startups have a harder time competing in that area. Most people say it does slow down development. Those of us who favor regulation say, well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, much of the ethos on the West Coast is, you know, move fast, break things. And some of us think, well, maybe don't need to break so many things with this technology because of the risks here. So mostly the concern is just slowing things down and unintended consequences. Also, with no ill respect to the regulators, but often the regulators don't have the computer science expertise or don't fully appreciate the technology and don't completely understand what they come in sort of with a blunt instrument. And they're trying to fix something, but it's very, very heavy-handed because they don't particularly understand the technology. And right now, with the salaries that people command in tech. They're much more interested in working on the industry side than they would be working on the government side to help with the regulation.
This spring, there was a lawsuit against, I believe, Google, where a mother whose son died by suicide blamed a chatbot leading up to that. There's a quote from one of the research we were doing prepping for this. Character AI and Google asked the court to dismiss the lawsuit on multiple grounds, including that the chatbot's output was constitutionally protected free speech. Are chatbots protected by the First Amendment?
Well, I don't know if the chatbot is protected, but I know certainly the service providers have certain protections. So if we talk about social media, for example, they are protected under federal law because they're not the ones actually giving the response. They're posting or making available somebody else's response. So in order to support that industry, there is legislation that shields them from litigation. Nobody yet really has tested whether that's going to apply the same way for LLMs, which aren't social media, and that do in some way give responses. I suspect that what the industry players will say is, well, no, we trained this tool on the internet, and the answers it's giving are the answers it's learned. We're not telling it what to say, so how could we be responsible for that when it was trained on internet or proprietary sources? It's a good question about First Amendment speech, and I even wondered with the Illinois law, if you look at how a therapeutic communication is defined, it's basically any written or spoken interaction that addresses mental or emotional concerns, such as interpreting feelings, providing strategies, developing treatment plans, or offering psychological feedback. Well, you know, if the tool says, gee, you sound a little depressed today, is that a therapeutic communication or, I hope you feel better? That would certainly get into some First Amendment issues, I think, because it's very, very broad what is prohibited.
I don't know if you've ever experimented with the software, the AI chatbot called Pi. This is supposedly, it's been framed as one of the good ones, right? It's co-founded by Reed Hastings, the one of the co-founders of LinkedIn, who has a fairly, benign reputation among Silicon Valley billionaires. And I asked it this morning, can you provide therapy? And it said, I'm not a trained therapist, so I can't provide therapy in the traditional sense. However, I can certainly be a listening ear and provide support and resources that might be helpful. And if you're feeling overwhelmed or struggling with something specific, I can offer a supportive space for you to talk about it. And I can provide some strategies that might help you cope. And then I went and read the legislation, or the law, I guess, now in Illinois. And I was, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know if you want to comment on it. But to me, it's like, boy, that certainly seems like a gray area. I wonder how that's going to play out.
I agree with you completely. When I read the law, I said, I have no doubt somebody's going to challenge this because it really is pretty vague in terms of what's in and what's out. As a psychologist, a trained psychologist, I know what they mean by providing therapy. But the definition here, it's very hard to define. I would think what you just quoted would be intended to address a mental or emotional concern, or, so that might already implicate it. It probably would be illegal under this law, or getting awfully close.
Hmm. Well, as a psychologist, what do you think about the use of AI to seek medical help? I mean, some people say it's so expensive to get traditional therapy, or I guess you'd say human therapy. What do you think of it?
So I'm of mixed minds here, frankly. On the one hand, and right now I live in Canada, there's a very, very long wait list for mental health services. And part of me feels like having that supportive system or somebody something to listen to you is better than nothing for most people. On the other hand, you hear of these stories of the child who suicided. There's another child who was a suggestion to harm their parents because they were prohibiting computer time or mobile phone time. And recently, somebody got advice to stop their intake of salt, and they got some kind of bromide poisoning. So, you know, and they're some people who maybe they already started with a mental health problem, but they become a little bit crazy because they spend 15 hours and the tool starts to tell them they're a genius and they're, you know, curing, you know, this big disease for the world or some other major innovation when that's not true. But the tools are designed to keep you engaged as long as possible. And that isn't necessarily a good thing. For sometimes people really do need to spend time with other people or just offline.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. John is calling from Rockford, Illinois, on line one. John, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for taking me. Has any AI application passed the Turing test? Aren't some of them pretty darn close? If that's the case, then how far can we be from the singularity, and what would be the consequences of arriving at that point?
Okay, we may need to define some of those terms for our listeners who are not as steeped. But Maura, can you take that?
Sure. So let's first talk about what the Turing test is. The Turing test is essentially a test where if I am talking to both Brian and a bot, and I'm having a conversation, and I can't tell which is which, then the bot has passed the Turing test because it has convinced me or confused me about whether it's human or not. And I believe we have passed that threshold. I think there are bots that, certainly I've been on customer service bots where I was not clear 100% whether I was talking with a human, maybe in some other country whose English wasn't perfect, or if I was talking to a bot. But that doesn't mean singularity is sort of the point at which our brains meld with the computers. And I think that's a whole different thing. So just because something can confuse us about whether it's real or fake doesn't mean that, you know, human thinking is lost and is going to be superseded by machines and so forth.
Well, thank you for that question, John. We appreciate it. I'm going to share a text message here from Heather in DeKalb, who says, specifically on this idea of the therapy ban in Illinois, "I'm so glad there's a ban on AI as a therapeutic tool. It's such a delicate thing, treating mental illness. This invention is far too new, and what we need is actual human interaction. There's already evidence that social media has negative effects on our real social lives. I see this tool as likely expanding on that." And more, I wonder what you think of that. I mean, we have, you mentioned the people who are sort of maybe already have some mental health issues, who are sort of talked into believing they're deities or great leaders or something like that. You know, what are some of the other potential negative consequences you might imagine of AI therapy?
Well, one of the things that was maybe slightly amusing, not amusing to them, but at least amusing to me, was when GPT-5 was introduced and they got rid of, or at least briefly made unavailable, 4.0, there were people who were having relationships and had built up over time relationships with 4.0 tools. And all of a sudden the personality changed for that tool, because 5 was made to be less obsequious and less sycophantic and less praising and saying great, great, great to everything you do. And all of a sudden people's romantic partners had different personalities, and people were freaking out. There were whole Reddit sites and websites of people feeling like their partners were dead. Of course, these were bot partners, but that's possible to happen, is people can get very, very, very attached to these relationships. And I think one of your commenters before had said something about de-skilling, which I think is a really important point, is you do lose skills, both social skills and cognitive skills, if you spend too much time interacting with these things instead of using your own brain to think if the answers come so easily. There's a recent study that showed that radiologists who were given access to LLMs to help them diagnose got better. And then when the LLMs were taken away, they were actually worse than they were before they started, because they were so dependent on the tools, they lost some of their ability to diagnose. So that worries me a bit.
Yeah, I wonder about that. But I suppose, is it just a matter of choosing what you are using it for, right? If it's a letter of recommendation, that's not core to what you do as a research professor and a consultant, as opposed to, you know, drafting proposals for clients or writing academic papers or something like that.
Well, think about students, Brian. Students are using this, and they are losing abilities. So MIT did an experiment where they attached electrodes to people's heads, and they asked them to write an essay. And they gave them the choice of just writing it using Google, or having an LLM write it. And there was virtually no brain activity going on when the LLM was writing. There was much more when they were writing and in between with the use of Google. And when they tested the people on their essays like a month later, the people who used the LLMs couldn't even remember what they had written.
Couldn't even remember what they had written. Yeah, I've experimented a little with these things, and I do find that, yeah, you can see where it would maybe atrophy you. Just a couple of minutes left. What is your big picture thought of where we're heading? Continuing into the Wild West, or do you see states being able to step up, or maybe is the industry going to successfully push back state by state?
I think there's a very, very powerful lobby. We've even seen some retrenchment in the EU, which was the furthest out with regulations. So I'm a little concerned about that. Again, I'm not worried about the Terminator scenario or of all of us becoming paperclips, but I do worry that there will be untoward effects that happen that don't need to happen because we haven't regulated sufficiently. We haven't thought about the issue sufficiently. And what happens when people start losing their jobs because they are replaced by AI tools? Have we thought about that sufficiently? Are we prepared for that? And I think the answer is probably no.
Yeah. You're not worried at all about the paperclip thing, huh? Batteries, Terminator, none of that strikes fear into your heart?
Not yet. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't fall that high on the doomsayer scale.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Hopefully not from the paperclip drawer. Maura Grossman is a research professor at the University of Waterloo. Thank you so much for sharing your time and knowledge with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up after the break, we'll talk more about AI and therapy and the ban here in Illinois, which was signed into law this month by Governor J.B. Pritzker. If you want to join us, again, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show.